I don't know that he has allayed the concerns necessarily about the public government option.
Alaska senators react to Obama's healthcare speech. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 10th of September. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, demolishing an historic and rundown district in Fairbanks.
There's so many mold spores in some of these buildings, they'll actually have to go in and have the breathing apparatus on and protect the workers that way.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Oregon has set a deadline for filing claims for anyone who has suffered injury by sexual, mental, or physical abuse or misconduct by a Jesuit priest or others, claiming the Society of Jesus Oregon Province has some responsibility. The deadline is November 30, 2009. Proof of claim forms are available online or by calling 1-888-909-0100. This message is sponsored by the Society of Jesus Oregon Province.
Alaska senators say President Obama gave a forceful speech on health care to Congress last night, although neither is sold on the legislation. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski has come out against health care bills Democrats have pushed, and Democratic Senator Mark Begich says he's waiting to see how legislation develops. Murkowski says the president did address concerns she's heard in Alaska, including the issue of cost.
His speech was a very powerful speech, and certainly towards the end when he challenged America to come up with solutions. I think it was a very important speech for him, because I think it's very fair to say that the American public is skeptical about what they have seen in the proposals before the Congress right now.
Murkowski's reaction to the president's address was more positive than that of many of her Republican colleagues, but she says that doesn't mean she's supporting his plan. President Obama said healthcare legislation has three basic goals: to ensure the uninsured, give security to people who already have healthcare, and slow cost increases. And while the president supports a public option, a government-run insurance program to compete with private insurers, he did not say it's a must-have. Murkowski was glad to hear that.
I don't know that he has allayed the concerns necessarily about the public government option. So we'll have to see how that one plays out. But I was listening for the words that it doesn't necessarily have to be a part of the plan. And I think he was careful to lay out that there are some other options.
Alaska Democratic Senator Mark Begich is also pleased the president is flexible on the public option.
This bill, this idea of reforming health care and bringing health insurance companies accountable, holding them accountable, should not be held hostage by that one item.
Senator Begich has not yet weighed in on some of the ideas being floated in Washington, saying he's waiting to see how they develop. Begich said one of the most important parts of the president's speech was a pledge to keep costs down.
What he said, not once, but several times, not now or in the future, it would add to the deficit. To me, that was very important, because the concern that I was hearing back home was, yeah, it may not cost today, but it's going to cost in the future. So that was reassuring.
In addition to laying out his healthcare priorities, the president shot down what he called lies, including the notion that he supports government death panels that would kill senior citizens and the disabled. Former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin is credited with sparking that controversy last month, and she reiterated her claim in a Wall Street Journal opinion piece this week.
Now, such a charge would be laughable if it weren't so cynical and irresponsible. It is a lie, plain and simple.
Senator Begich says it was time for the president to dismiss the death panel rumor, and says Obama also reassured senior citizens that their care should only increase under legislation.
And I like the fact that he didn't tell us that. He spoke to the senior population of this country, because I think there's a lot of fear out there that the potential savings would be extracted from seniors to pay for the uninsured. What he made very clear today was that these savings would go to benefit seniors and enhance benefit with regards to prescription drugs, which I think is critical.
Begich met with the president at the White House today as part of a moderate Democrats group to discuss health care priorities. They're considered to be a crucial swing group. The third member of Alaska's congressional delegation, Representative Don Young, is still in Alaska. His office put out a statement criticizing the president's plans, saying it will not answer any of the country's health care needs. A long-sought road and bridge project will nearly wipe clean an historic but rundown swath of Fairbanks. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the Illinois Street Road and Bridge Project will change the look of the city.
The goal of the project is to improve access to and through downtown Fairbanks, but the upgrade is coming at a cost. Several old but iconic structures are in the way and will come down. Lifelong Fairbanks resident John Jakovich says the Samson's Hardware Building will be missed.
That's kind of like a cornerstone. It's, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, Mount Rushmore. You just know it's there. So that's what I'm going to miss the most is Samson's Hardware.
While Jakovich laments the loss of the old Samson's, his own business building is being spared. There's just enough space for the tall, narrow Big Eye Bar to remain. The Big Eye looks a little rough, but it's been deemed stable, and Jakovich says he plans to fix it up while everything around it comes down.
I know what it looks like now, but I vision things down the road where when you look from across the river on First Avenue, you're going to go, wow, what's that building over there? And that's what we're here for, so just hang on, give us a little time, give us a little money, and we'll get her done.
The Big Eye, or International Hotel, as it was known 100 years ago, has been in the current building for the last 50. The property will only clear the road by about 20 feet, and Jakovich says he has to build a new parking area out back. Eight structures are coming down in the vicinity of the bar, and work started this week. State Department of Transportation spokeswoman Meadow Bailey says the first step is dealing with hazardous waste.
There's so many mold spores in some of these buildings, they'll actually have to go in and have the breathing apparatus on and protect the workers that way. It's not just an easy knocking over a building. There's a lot of things that you have to take into consideration as far as safety goes. Some of these buildings have been, you know, habited by transient populations, so they've been living in there. There's a lot of fecal matter in some of them, asbestos in almost every single one of the buildings, so that abatement, that'll be the first process actually, is going in and removing the hazardous materials.
State demolition contractor Nupricon Superintendent Kevin Larson says much of the work will go on out of public view.
Most of the stuff that's going to happen is going to be happening behind the walls. I mean, as far as asbestos remediation, they'll see a drop box out here where the guys are putting it in a line drop box. And that's probably all they're going to see on that portion of it. You know, when they walk down the street here, you know, they're going to see equipment moving and guys running around and fire hoses out, keeping dust down, and the building's coming down.
Demolition is expected to be completed by November, with the contract for the new bridge going out shortly afterwards. Jakovich says once the Big Eye is the only remaining old structure in the redeveloped area, he plans to try to get it listed on the National Register of Historic Places. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The Tanana Valley Clinic in Fairbanks is being overwhelmed with sick people wanting to be tested and treated for H1N1 or swine flu. Chief Medical Officer Dr. Hunter Judkin says TVC's First Care Clinic saw a record 123 patients Tuesday.
Our telephone lines are jammed and our clinic is full. People have questions and are concerned, want to know what to do if they're sick.
The situation follows the death of a 10-year-old Fairbanks boy last week who tested positive for H1N1 flu, as well as a severe bacterial infection. Dr. Judkin says the boy's accelerated illness is not the case with most healthy people who simply get the flu. He says they typically suffer 100-degree plus fever, cough and sore throat, but recover without medical attention.
People should typically do well and not require treatment with medications, with antivirals. We're concerned in that treating many, many people who would otherwise really not need medication, we run the risk of developing resistance of the H1N1 strain to the common antiviral drugs.
Judkin says the other concern is that the supply of antivirals could run low. He cautions that flu sufferers under 5, over 65, who are pregnant, have underlying health conditions, or experiencing breathing problems, should see a doctor. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, preserving a secretive part of Alaska's military history. And were they nuclear?
I can neither confirm nor deny that.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Military officials say three soldiers based at Fort Richardson, including two from Ohio and one from Nevada, were killed in Iraq when their vehicle was hit by an explosive device. The Department of Defense identified the victims as Staff Sergeant Shannon Smith, Private First Class Thomas Lyons, and Private First Class Zachary Myers. The 31-year-old Smith and 21-year-old Myers were both from Ohio. Lyons, who was 20, was from Nevada. Defense officials say their vehicle was attacked Tuesday in Iraq. All three were assigned to the 545th Military Police Company, Arctic Military Police Battalion at Fort Richardson in Anchorage. American Indian and Alaska Native youth have the highest suicide rate of any adolescents in the nation. They're 3.5 times more likely to kill themselves, according to the Indian Health Service. So senators on the Indian Affairs Committee have introduced legislation to combat the problem. The bill, called the Seventh Generation Promise, the Indian Youth Suicide Prevention Act of 2009, would increase access to mental health professionals through telemedicine and other tools. It would start a telemental health demonstration project and encourage those who serve Native youth to hire medical interns. Committee Chairman Senator Byron Dorgan of North Dakota is the Democratic sponsor. He called suicide a silent epidemic in Indian country.
It is especially tragic when it is a child, because that is someone whose life is in front of them and extinguished because of feelings of helplessness and hopelessness. And so what we're trying to think through is what causes all of this. We understand there that part of the roots reflect the difficulties of living in third world conditions.
Dorgan is co-sponsoring the bill with Republican Senator Mike Johanns of Nebraska. Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski is on the committee and plans to sign on as a co-sponsor. She says she's especially concerned about young Native men in Alaska. They commit suicide at a rate 5 times higher than girls. The Senate Indian Affairs Committee took testimony today on the problem of suicide. It heard from Indian Health Service Director Dr. Yvette Robideau. She says there's simply not enough access to mental health services in Alaska Native villages and on Indian reservations.
I'm pleased that the legislation includes the telebehavioral health, the telemental health, because that is a way that we can increase access to psychiatric and psychological care through a network of resources using technology so that we could potentially provide 24/7 crisis care if needed.
Robideau says she wants to see more American Indians and Alaska Natives going into the field of mental health and serving their communities. Dr. Dolores Bigfoot, a professor in child clinical psychology at the University of Oklahoma, shared her personal story.
My beautiful, precious son of 33 years died 10 months ago today. His death certificate does not say suicide. However, his self-harm behavior created a situation in which injury resulted in his death. The outcome was the same.
Bigfoot says there are thousands of young Alaska Native and American Indians whose deaths aren't counted as suicide, but still result from emotional pain. The Petersburg City Council will be urging the state to keep at least one full-time children's social worker in town. The issue was on this week's council agenda following news that the state may be moving its Office of Children's Services jobs to Juneau. Local police, mental health clinicians, educators, foster parents, and others told the council this week that the lack of a social worker would have major impacts in Petersburg and the other communities. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Petersburg Police Chief Dale Stone worried the Office of Children's Services would lose its effectiveness at helping to prevent problems from getting worse in Petersburg if the agency has to cover local cases from its office in Juneau.
And perhaps I'm being a little negative on this, but I think it's accurate. They may come through town initially on just some meet the folks and that sort of thing. And then we'll be getting them only when we have a dire emergency here and they have to come and take a child out of the home or something like that. The value in having somebody local that knows the community and knows the other agencies is just invaluable.
Counselor Lee Corio noted that the impact extended beyond Petersburg, since the local office also covers the nearby communities of Wrangell and Cake.
The infrastructure of the office makes it so that Cake and Wrangell can be served pretty well from Petersburg. Mm-hmm. But if we lose that position, then we're going to see both Cake, Petersburg, and Wrangell all being marginalized.
The Petersburg office is currently staffed by two social workers. Supervisor Debbie Downs will soon be retiring. Her colleague Bruce Westry is a retired law enforcement officer who was also expecting to leave his position in the fall. They expected the agency would keep at least one of the positions in Petersburg after they left. However, Downs said last week her superiors recently told her both positions would be moved to Juneau. Downs and Westry did not go to the council meeting, but those who did shared the same concerns that Petersburg could lose a key link in its cooperative network of prevention, education, and emergency services for children. Liz Bacom is a former foster parent.
As a former foster family, we experienced firsthand the benefit of having our local office staffed. It was especially very helpful to have social workers who understand the workings in this community. This was a very stressful and difficult time for our foster children and for us, especially after the initial emergency placement.
The schools were well represented Tuesday, including all three principals and Superintendent Rob Thomason. Thomason read from a letter he sent out to state decision makers on behalf of the district. He said the loss of locally based social workers threatened the health of the community.
While Petersburg has an outstanding school system, it is strong and vibrant due to a spirit of cooperation and support that exists in the community. When one of the primary supports for children is removed, the other agencies that support youth lose effectiveness. Children just lose.
Petersburg Mental Health Services Director Susan Omer was concerned that fewer local residents would be willing to report cases of abuse or neglect to an unknown person in Juneau, and she feared more of the cases that are reported will lead to children being taken out of their homes.
What we have right now is a system where there are strong agencies that work together well, and we're able to manage situations before you have to rip kids out of their parents' arms.
When there are holes in the local safety net, children have been injured or far worse, according to retired public health nurse Marlene Cushing, who has 30 years of perspective on the delivery of child protective services in Petersburg.
Services delivered from Juneau will mean no prevention. It'll mean no early intervention. Our families will be a low priority compared to the flood of reports that the Juneau office gets.
The counselors voted unanimously to send a letter out to lawmakers and other state officials, urging them to make sure Petersburg continues to have a full-time social worker stationed in town. A Department of Health and Social Services spokesperson told KFSK Radio late last week that the Office of Children's Services had not yet made a final decision on the issue, and the officials declined to comment until they had made a decision. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Penn Air, providing scheduled service to 36 communities throughout Southwest Alaska. Reservations online at pennair.com.
Anchorage businessman and columnist Andrew Helcrow announced today that he will run against Congressman Don Young in next year's Republican primary election. Helcrow was in the State House of Representatives between 1999 and 2003 and ran as an independent candidate for governor against Sarah Palin and Democrat Tony Knowles in 2006. He says his campaign is based on one issue: Don Young's lack of seniority in the U.S. House after 36 years in office. He says Alaska has an 18-term freshman in the House right now.
This really is about seniority. And it's ironic because this is the argument that certainly our congressional delegation has used for the last few decades, that seniority matters. As a matter of fact, that was one of Congressman Young's key campaign pitches last year when he ran against former minority leader Ethan Berkowitz, was that seniority matters. And I absolutely agree, seniority matters. But after that election, he was stripped of his seniority. And again, seniority does matter.
Young resigned his ranking seniority position on the House Natural Resources Committee in December after Republican members scheduled a vote of no confidence against him. Young later said he still has seniority and will be able to work with other House members. Helcro says he agrees with Young on such things as state sovereignty and Second Amendment rights, and he believes in what Young has done during his time in office. However, he wants to see much more control of federal spending, and he sees other issues such as health care and climate change as questions to be answered by a Republican for the next generation.
I think Don Young has done some good work for this state in the last 36 years, but it is truly time, given the fact that the country is in the position it's in now, and the fact that Alaska has no more seniority and only has one representative to the United States House of Representatives, it's critical that we kind of turn over this election cycle so we can gain seniority just like Don Young did when he was elected in 1973.
Helcro says he plans to build on his statewide business career, his legislative experience, his independent run for governor, and his work blogging and in talk radio to communicate his views to Alaskans. In a statement released this morning, Young says he's still in the race for re-election, thanking voters for their previous support and pledging to continue the fight for Alaska in Congress. Veterans who worked at the U.S. military's network of anti-aircraft missile complexes are gathering in Anchorage this weekend. They're hoping to help restore one of the best preserved sites in the country out of hundreds that were built during the Cold War to guard against Soviet attack. Eight sites existed in Alaska, but only one is still largely intact, the Nike Site Summit on Mount Gordon Lion in the Chugach Mountains. Greg DeRocher worked there from 1974 to 1976. He says Site Summit was part of an impressive network of military installations.
These things were all over the country and the world. There was a they were in NATO ally countries, South Korea.
How many missiles were at each facility?
You know, I don't know if that is still classified or not, but let's just say over 20.
And were they nuclear missiles?
I can neither confirm nor deny that.
Okay. The work that you did, how secretive was it?
We all had security, high security clearances, and we weren't supposed to tell, you know, any more than public need to know. I mean, you know, spouses, friends, everything would say, "Well, what do you do? Oh, we guard the missile." Everyone knew there's missiles up there because they would actually launch them back in the early '60s. They launched a number of them from up there, and that's the other thing about this whole Friends of Nike site. Some of we want to preserve the, we want to teach the memories of the Cold War, the lessons of the Cold War, before it's forgotten, because it was a really real war. We actually had bunkers set up. We all carried M16s and 45s, and we had loads of ammo that we carried, and we had to be prepared to defend the thing. But we took it seriously, and we always said that they'd probably get the missiles off, and then we'd all be glowing. And that was kind of that gallows humor kind of thing.
That might confirm what my earlier question was.
Can neither confirm nor deny.
During that time, how worried were you that the Soviet Union would launch an attack?
We weren't really concerned that much. There was a concern. There was, some things were going on in the Mideast at the time that we had one captain that made us get rid of every rock over 6 inches in diameter in the whole launch area. Now, we're on top of a mountain that was bulldozed, that was flattened out to make room for this thing. And they, you know, a bulldozer going over the countryside leaves a lot of rocks. And 6-inch rocks were in great abundance, 6 inches and above. And we hauled a lot of rock because they didn't want the any kind of Middle East terrorist to be able to hide behind anything. So we joked about the six-inch terrorists that would be hiding behind the rocks shooting at us. But We made fun of it, but we did it.
Well, describe the Nike Site Summit and why it's important to preserve this.
Well, for one thing, it is the best preserved site left in Alaska. Kincaid Park, of course, was Alpha Battery, and the one of the One of the bunkers was made into the Kincaid Chalet, where people have their picnics, and some of the other buildings that were used are still around. They're being used for equipment storage and such, but it's you don't have the whole structure of the place is lost. You can't see how things related. At Site Summit, you have the launch control area where the barracks was, where all the launch control features were. That is still there, although it's slated for demolition. But the clamshell towers, what we call the where some of the radar equipment was, those are still up. The launch area with both of the bunkers, the blast mounds, the sentry guard stations where I worked, and I did roving patrols too. But all that stuff is still down there, and the context is there, so you can see where the launch control area was. You can see where the launch area was and the road connecting them. It's one of the best preserved left in the nation, and the best preserved left in Alaska.
Greg DeRocher is a veteran who worked at the Nike Site Summit and is working to preserve the structures with the nonprofit group Friends of Nike Site Summit. An ordinance before the Fairbanks Assembly would require large retailers to charge customers for plastic shopping bags. The 5 cent per bag charge is aimed at reducing waste. Bag fee revenue would be used to fund recycling in the borough. Sponsor and Assembly Presiding Officer Nadine Winters says she's modified an earlier version of the bag ordinance to clarify two key points.
Specifically say the Recycling Commission will make recommendations on how to spend the fee money for recycling programs. And then secondly is to allow retailers to keep 3% of the fee they collect to cover any costs they might incur by collecting and then remitting the bag fee.
Winters says she's shopped the bag fee around to the big box stores it would apply to, but has only gotten a response from Walmart. She says the retail giant supports recycling and reducing waste, but is opposed to anything mandatory. Winters says lower 48 communities have implemented bag fees and have seen a reduction in bag consumption and the amount of local trash. The Assembly also considers an ordinance that would kill the borough's vehicle inspection and maintenance program on December 31st. Assemblymember Luke Hopkins says the ordinance has been hung up because the borough can't axe the carbon monoxide control program without the official okay of the Environmental Protection Agency.
We're kind of waiting for that publication in the Federal Register to then say, aha, it can now end.
Hopkins says the EPA okay is expected to come this fall. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks and Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Gooseberry Peter, and I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the new AT&T. Your world delivered.
The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.